Thank you very much. The next speaker is someone that actually somehow represents the tradition of nonviolent direct action against nuclear weapons. I welcome Dr. Michael Rangel.
Hello. I think the essential moral question here is the one that my friend and colleague Pat Pottle put to Air Commodore McGill at our trial and the trial of others in the Committee 100 back in 1962. We were charged under the Official Secrets Act for organizing a demonstration very like this one, where we went to Wethersfield Air Base and with the intention of sitting on the runways and preventing the nuclear weapons being carried by the American planes there. The prosecution, which was conducted by the Attorney General at the time, brought on Air Commodore McGill to testify that what we were doing was contrary to the safety and interests of the state. And what Pat Pottle asked him was this: would you press the button that you knew would kill, annihilate millions of people? And his answer, very frankly, was this: if the circumstances demanded it, I would. Now, McGill's honest reply, it's a startling and brutal reply, exposes the intellectual dishonesty of those who say that nuclear weapons are only for deterrence and not for use. The deterrence has no meaning unless there are not only weapons to carry out the threat, but also people trained to obey without hesitation the order to unleash them. And anyone who is not prepared, at least in principle, to make the same reply as Air Commodore McGill has no moral or political right to say that they support Britain or any other country having nuclear weapons. Now, because the Cold War has, for the time being at least, come to an end and removed the imminent danger of total global destruction which we lived under in those years, and because nuclear weapons have not been actually used since 1945 with the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, many people and governments have become complacent. If this was not so, there would be hundreds of people here, as I would like to see today.
Yeah.
This complacency is being challenged to some extent by the spread of nuclear weapons to other countries, and more particularly by the threat that they may be acquired by countries which are seen as unstable or which are opposing Western interests. What is needed, however, is not simply a sense of our own peril in this situation, but a renewed sense of the outrage which many of us felt and feel, that of the idea of unleashing these nuclear weapons on fellow human beings. We need to recapture that sense of absolute outrage that this is something which cannot possibly be done. This does not mean that it is sufficient to establish that moral imperative. We have also to deal with, on their own terms, the arguments that are put forward in favor of nuclear weapons. The political, strategic, legal arguments. And In fact, that has been going on for many years. You've had academics, intellectuals, lawyers, peace activists who have been researching this whole area, and we've heard some of the contributions, we'll hear some more today, to show that these arguments are false and that none of them can possibly justify having the weapons. And I think there's a context in which we have to see any of this strategic and moral and legal arguments, and that is that in social sciences one can never be 100% sure, no matter how carefully one makes one's calculations, and so strategic calculations are not going to be 100% right, or we cannot be 100% sure that they are right. What is 100% sure is that if you release one of these weapons, you will kill thousands, perhaps millions of people. Now, I don't think any calculation, any strategic or any other calculation, which does not yield certainty, can justify weapons which we know for certain, and there is no doubt about that, what the results of their unleashing would be. Now, moving to a consideration of British nuclear weapons, the arguments for those have always been weak. They were first, the decision was taken in secret by the Attlee government in 1947, and that had much more to do with a sense of Britain's prestige and illusion about its position in the world than anything to do with national security. And let us remind ourselves that at that time, Russia had not even exploded its own nuclear weapons. So there wasn't that argument, they have them, therefore we have to have them. At that time, they had not exploded their weapons. Their first weapon was exploded in 1949. This decision was taken in secret in 1947. And the principal assumption during the years of the Cold War was that there were circumstances. This was the argument that having a second center of decision-making about the use of nuclear weapons would increase the security of the Western, or enhance the Western deterrent stance. But it relied on an assumption, or there was an implicit assumption, that Britain would use its nuclear weapons in circumstances in which the United States would not. Now, in terms of realpolitik, this was total nonsense. And in fact, government spokesmen were a bit reluctant to come out with it too boldly, because it was more or less saying, well, we can't rely upon the Americans to use their weapons. Today, Britain's nuclear posture makes even less sense. The argument that it enables Britain to punch above its weight, this is the phrase that's used, is open to any other country. Why shouldn't any other country, why shouldn't Iran for that matter, or Iraq say, we want to punch above our weight? What's so special about this country that it is all right for it to have nuclear weapons to punch above its weight? Well, that there is something scandalous about other countries wanted to do the same. The further argument that Britain needs to keep its nuclear weapons because we live in an uncertain world and we don't know what might happen in the future, that too is open to any other country. And the fact is that by having these weapons, we make that uncertainty greater. We make it more likely that there will be the proliferation of nuclear weapons. And as we've heard from previous speakers, the decision to upgrade and continue with the Trident system flies in the face and is against the provisions of the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Under that, under Article 6, those existing nuclear powers pledge themselves to work honestly for nuclear disarmament. And that was the deal. That deal we have reneged on. And this is an absolute disgrace. And another reason why we have to be to oppose the Trident system. In this situation, concerned citizens are under an obligation to act against the policies of their own government, not only through normal constitutional channels, but also depending upon individual circumstances, because not everybody can take this kind of action, by means of non-violent direct action. And that is why I personally, at the age of 73, I should add, I'm joining other academics. I'm joining other academics and researchers in Fast Lane today to discuss with them the issues involved, to obstruct the work of the base, however briefly, and to try to, by means of this direct action, to stimulate a more profound consideration of Britain's nuclear stance and of the decisions that are being contemplated. Thank you.